On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we tell you which Raiders that are going to be free agents that the Raiders have to keep. We'll tell you about Rich Bisaccia getting interviewed by Mark Davis for the head coaching position that he apparently didn't already earn. The latest on Jim Harbaugh, and of course, the good, the bad, and the ugly from our playoff loss. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags,
RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. It's a first show, first official podcast show, big show, as an off-season show. It feels weird. It feels like summer break just let out, but you're not quite as excited. Weird. Like, what are you going to do with yourself?
Yeah, it's like you're on summer break, but like you got mono. You know, everyone else is having fun, and you're just sitting at home. It's like tired.
Bart Simpson on Snow Day when he's got his like leg broke or whatever, and he can't go play, and everyone's outside playing, just out the window looking. Aww.
Yeah. So sad.
How do you feel though, generally? Because like the last three seasons, we've ended the season on terrible losing streaks, right? Like, you know, last season started 6-3, ended up 8-8. Before that was 6-4, ended up 7-9. I forgot what it was before that, but it was like we still ended the season on like a 2-7 run or something terrible like that. Whereas this season was the opposite. An amazing, out of nowhere, nobody predicted 4-game win streak to close the regular season and break into the playoffs. So obviously it's like you never ever are entirely happy. Like only one franchise is happy at the end of a season, right? Whoever wins the Super Bowl. Everyone else, no matter what you accomplish and how well you do, you're kind of just like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like the good thing is, it's like the good news is, you know, it was a cool party. The bad news is the party's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's
it was a high school party that went past midnight before the cops busted it open. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, you hooked up, you felt on some titties.
You got the number, but you didn't close the deal.
You didn't close the deal.
Yeah.
My freaking shit's falling apart over here. I don't know if I'm puzzling around here.
You look so different without a headset on.
Oh yeah.
You got new lighting, no headset. You're like, hey, I'm trying to show off a little bit. While you're MacGyvering your ears, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Again, a lot of off-season stuff to get to because tons of moving pieces. We'll make sure to keep you posted on everything. Like, comment, subscribe. We're at a lot of big things coming up in the future, too, for all you fellow windbags. So make sure you stay abreast of all those things. So first things first, question of the day. Which Raiders whose contract just expired do we have to keep? We're going to pin this question up at top of the comment section. Leave your comments below. Let us know what you think. Because this was a unique season in that aspect because we had so many one-year players. So many guys on one-year contracts. And so many of them played well. I don't know who to give the credit for. I think Gus Bradley gets a lot of credit for just bringing in random dudes in the defense that delivered, especially a lot of like defensive linemen. Again, like I talked about, this team overperformed their roster. Like we were a less talented team than most of the teams we beat. So there was something special in the air, something special in the water in Las Vegas that got this win going. And so now it's a matter of like, which of those guys with the contract ending do we have to keep? Now, there's a lot of different equations to this, right? Because some guys played off their ass and are going to get huge contracts somewhere else that we're going to have to compete with. A lot of guys played great and then got hurt. A lot of guys looked like they were about to be impact players this season and then got hurt. So it's not as simple as listing the best guys in order. But the best guys in order of How much do they still have? Age? What are they going to cost us? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that crazy sliding scale, you know? Mm-hmm. You see, okay, it's going to cost us this much, but what can we get to replace it at what cost, right?
Yeah.
Free agency, draft, what do we already have on the practice squad? What are they already showing us? Hey, he learned to use this mute button.
I don't have a mute. I have just a slider on my mixer that I had to learn to use. I'm afraid anytime I touch anything on here, I'm going to screw up the audio forever.
The whole thing, yeah.
It took a lot of balls for me to push that button.
Big balls. Right now, what the easiest way to look at it is look at the thinnest position groups and also combine that with the impact of the individual player on the team. And defensively, you take a look at the thinnest position group, which is the D-tackle. And then you take a look at
Boy Raiders.worldwide. I was like making a list of the players in my head. And then I was like scrolling through Instagram. I was like, oh, they got it there about as better than I could make it.
Perfect. That is.
So here's all the guys. And it's not just 1 year guys, it's a lot of guys that
are coming off
a contract. Anyone who's coming off a contract. And it's a wild mix, right?
Yeah.
Quarterbacks, veterans,
ton of defense.
Like, you know, Alex Ingold for sure they're gonna bring back. He's a team captain. He'll probably come in cheap. That's kind of an easier one.
Yeah.
Brandon Parker, gone. Not gonna redo him. But then there's some random ones, right? Like, what are we gonna do with Casey Hayward? He's gonna get some big offers. Like, he played really, really well this season. And in the right scheme, people are gonna want him. How hard are we gonna try to keep him? And this is another reason why this coaching search and GM search, which we'll get to here in a sec, we need to speed that up. Because these players are going to want to know who their coach is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Casey Hayward flourishes under Gus Bradley. Is he like, you know, if he gets equal money somewhere else, is he going to stay here to play for Gus, then taking the same money, maybe even a little bit more somewhere else? Like, these are all elements that we got to figure out when we start making these signings. We don't even have a GM to sign these guys.
Yeah. Well, also, if our defensive coordinator isn't Gus Bradley, do you want Casey Hayward? Mm-hmm. If it is Gus Bradley, yeah, then Casey Hayward's one of the guys you need to keep the most because he plays a premium position and he played really well. On top of that, yeah, it's the D tackle. It's your thinnest group. These are basically all of your D tackles. On your team are on the list. You know, I don't really see, who else is a D tackle that's on our team that is not on the list.
Those are all the D-tackles. leading playing time guys.
I don't think anyone else really gets any type of snap. Mm-hmm. Morrow didn't really play this year. He played KJ Wright can go. Jalen Richard, he's fucking great, awesome dude, but I mean, he makes too much money. He
for
can
a
be
third
replaced
string running back because yeah. Like, Jacobs and Kenyon Drake are still, you know, on salary. Yeah. Like they're still contracted for next season.
Zay Jones, I really only see Zay staying if Carr stays, and we'll talk about that later.
I think we'll keep him because he's like 800 grand, like he's pennies, and he has a lot of starting experience.
That's what he got paid this year. That's what he got. I mean, and he did produce a lot for what he was paid. Yeah. Let's see. Derek Carrier, he is what he is. We'll probably re-sign him. Parker, hope not. Filon, like we talked about that. Faison, he's earned himself a contract. Again, depending on who's the defensive coordinator and what scheme they want to run. Teamer, I don't see Teamer being too expensive, even if you do keep him as a special teams guy. And Levitt's a core special teams guy. You'll get him on the cheap.
It's nice. Like, it showed again. Like, I sound like a broken record, but like the theme of last season was like random dudes stepping up. You have all these guys whose contracts are up, and basically every single one of them, you're like, yeah, I want to keep him if we can make it work. Like, it makes sense. Like, yeah, I'm glad he's on the team. Other than like basically Brandon Parker. Everyone else is like, he's the only ones we're kind of iffy on, like Jalen Richard, we love, played great. Clutch, he's just a little expensive for a third string running back. Zay Jones played his best season of his career, so I'm going to try to snatch him up, and we know he should be on for cheap. Dalen Levitt, kind of just, you know, whatever, special teamer. But other than that, it's like, I want to keep everybody. Morrow, Hankins, I'd be down to keep Wright if we can get him real cheap, but he's not a priority. Solomon Thomas, I want to keep. Quentin Jefferson, I want to keep. Casey Hayward, I want to keep. This is the only one on there is kind of like, all right, Marcus Mariota is going to get paid somewhere else. He's too injury prone to be a backup quarterback. Like, you need to not be injury prone. You need to be relied on, because you go into a game with only two active quarterbacks. Your first one goes down, and your second one goes down. Like, that game's over, right? Like, it's basically going to be like Hunter Renfro playing quarterback or emergency quarterback or something, right?
Well, yeah. Like I said it before, those are the two things that your backup quarterback needs to be, is they need to be steady and they need to be durable. Because you don't need flash from a backup quarterback. You just need, can you run the system? Can you not make mistakes? Yes. Yeah. Can you not get hurt? Okay, good.
And I don't think Mariota could really run the system. Like, he has to run a Mariota. They have to run a Mariota offense. Did he throw a single pass this season? He played a lot. But he did?
He threw a pass in the Charger game.
That was it, right? Just one.
Yeah.
It was incomplete. Right?
Yeah. It was a good play. It was a good pass. It was a good play by the corner. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was incomplete.
So it's like, he's not even like a guy. Like, at least Nathan Peterman can do the system. He'd do it poorly, but at least he's in the system. Like, Marcus Mariota, like, we have to change everything, and he's not reliable, and he breaks all the time. It's like
Nathan Peterman.
This is not a backup that I want. Who's their top three have to keep? And I'll let you decide the criteria for have to keep. Because maybe some guy you really want, but you're like, I don't want to pay him what someone's gonna wanna give him.
Okay,
you tell me.
So what I'm gonna base it off of is who is that good mix of production and is not so scheme dependent. Mm-hmm. Right. So that kind of takes off one of the higher guys, which is Casey Hayward. Yep. I would say Ingold.
I'd say Casey Hayward. I would say Casey Hayward is the best player on this list.
Of the right scheme,
exactly. In the perfect scenario, right? The guy who played best this season for us and the most snaps, played best. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. Season. But again, I mean, if you want to take a look, I mean, probably going to be Hankins, Jefferson, and Carrier. Really? Because again,
got to fill that D line.
Yeah, because the thing is, I mean, that D line is so thin up the middle. Mm-hmm. Quentin Jefferson was really the only one that gave you any type of steady pressure on the passer up the middle. Hankins was the guy holding it down against the run. Filon was good again, but he's injury prone. He got hurt. He came on at the end of the year, but he was always getting nicked up, and unfortunately he blew his knee out. It sucks, his patella tendon. And Ingold is, again, scheme dependent. Does the scheme that we're going to run, do they use a fullback?
I'll give you my five.
Why you only give me three and you give me
Filon. Filon, Filon, Filon. He's coming back and he's going to be cheap.
Great. He's going to come back. But again, man, he got injury concerns, man.
Yeah. But like the defensive line, you need rotational guys. Like, that's the one. Obviously, you never want someone injury prone. Like, you don't mm-hmm. want that. But you can get away with a defensive tackle because it's such a rotational position, right? Like, you also go into the season knowing, like, these 300 pounders. 18-week season, we're going to lose a couple. Guaranteed. Like, we're guaranteed going to lose a couple. It's kind of one of those positions you're like, keep throwing beef into the meat grinder, right?
Gerald McCoy might be super cheap, man. He's going to be out for four games.
I really want to know what Morrow's going to give us. He was poised to be a starter before he got hurt.
Ah, man, he's got outplayed now. Freaking Diablo's younger, cheaper, bigger, faster. Mm-hmm. He's just, you know, he just got overtaken. I mean, he could maybe take the KJ Wright role. He's cheaper than KJ Wright.
Yep. Give him a chance.
He's also way faster than KJ Wright. KJ Wright got burnt pretty good a couple times by some speedy running backs.
It's going to be hard. I wonder if there's going to be a mutiny in the locker room with fans. If there's, let's say it's a brand new coach. Let's say it's Harbaugh. Well, not really Harbaugh because he runs power. So he's definitely
Mr. X.
Mr. Miscellaneous guy, right? If they get rid of Jalen Richard and Alec Ingold, it might be mutiny because they're just such beloved dudes.
Yeah, man. It's not show friends, bro.
I know. Yeah. I know.
This is really going to test the mettle of the toughness and the toughness of this locker room.
Mm-hmm.
It's all well and good when everyone's buddy kumbaya, you know, around each other. But like I said in the post game show on Saturday, that's the last time that team's going to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And that finality hit them, and that's why a lot of them got so emotional. They know what's going on. Like, hey, man, this is going to be it for us. This incarnation of this team is done. There's going to be a lot of guys that we didn't think were going to be cut that are going to be sent packing.
And that's the other part, is how many of these guys leaving were a core part of what made that team such a cohesive unit and part of what made it so successful, right? Like, were guys, yeah, they played okay, but they were such great locker room guys that made everyone better. Yeah. How much of that's going to be a part of the equation with guys of this? Because so often when they sign guys, it's like, I can't believe they gave this guy this contract. I can't believe they extended this guy. And I always just write it off as just dumb. I was like, oh, they shouldn't have done that. But I think sometimes I got to give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt. Well, all right, maybe that's the locker room glue guy. And maybe you give them 15% more money to keep him from going somewhere because he adds kind of like an intangible to the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, anyone new, like a new GM and a new coach, they're not going to know about that. All they're going to care about is production, which I don't mind. I'm not trying to downplay locker room cohesiveness. But that's going to test, you know, the professionalism of the people in the locker room. Are you going to really, you know, be an uproar because Jalen Richard and Alex Ingold are gone? Like, come on, you know, be a professional.
It's such an unusual reset, right? Because normally when a new coach and new GM comes in, it's because you suck. It's because you had a losing record. You're starting over. That's not the case. Like, you've got a winning formula, more or less, if we can maintain it. Won 10 games, went to the playoffs. It's like, we're not resetting everything. We're trying to reload. We're trying to improve. Yeah. But it's part of the, like, normal time, it's like we want a complete culture change. Whatever we're doing last season, we want to do the opposite. And there are some things we definitely need to get better, right? Like terrible red zone turnovers. There's certainly plenty of things to work on. Yeah. There's a lot of good things that we're going to try to carry on from last season to this one. And the hardest one, the one that's like trying to grab a cloud, is keeping that team cohesiveness that drove us to such success last season. If we can have that team cohesiveness and then add the players, that is like, that's the recipe for Super Bowl wins, right? Like everyone's like, how did the Eagles win the Super Bowl a couple seasons ago? They had what the Raiders had this season. They had that. Like, how did Nick Foles do so well? And they were so under-talented.
They also had a lot more talent too.
They had, exactly. Like, we're not gonna win a Super Bowl with this talent. But what I'm saying is that cohesiveness plus, like,
yeah,
you know, we're a few superstars away from, I think, really doing something special, like a true number one or number two receiver, you know, some, you know, one or two really good linemen. Like, there's some, right, you know, some, it's not that easy, but I think a couple crucial guys, and if we get a couple hits with a couple right guys at the exact right spots, we're a team to deal with. I mean, we're one play away from going to the second round of the playoffs. Like, it's a lot of good things you want to keep going while still always improving every single second.
Yeah. And one of the things that you're going to notice too, is scheme wise. The teams that you see are going to move on in the playoffs, they do a lot of things well that we don't do well. They cash in the red zone. Right. Once they get in the red zone,
everyone cashes in the red zone better than us. Not even playoff teams.
Well, that's
were we literally last?
I don't know. I don't think we were last. Percentage? I don't think we were last, but we were
at certain points.
Maybe. We should have been. But also, these defenses, they may not be great defenses as far as like points given up and stuff like that on the average, but they do create a hell of a lot more turnovers than we do. And that is schematically something that we just aren't going to be doing under a Gus Bradley defense. Yeah. And I mean,
play fast, play simple. And the downside is you get out schemed.
Well, that's the thing, is now that's a good scheme to have. If you don't have a lot of talent, if you have a lot of new people and don't have a ton of talent, well then now you need to get talent so you can play faster and you could play a little bit more.
Well, not necessarily talent. I think it's a great scheme for talent if it's dumb talent, right? If you're just like, I'm just an athlete, but I'm not going to remember. I'm not going to be able to I'm not going to be able to digest 20 to 25 different third down defenses every week, right?
Whoa, hold on.
You got to be experienced.
That's a Gunther thing, okay? Having played most of my football on that side of the ball, you have those calls, but that's not a part of your playbook for that week. That week, you only have a certain amount of calls. Like, you have all the calls in the actual playbook, but your game plan is a lot smaller than that. Normally, you're not going to have the entire playbook open to you like a Gunther defense. You're going to have a specific game plan for that specific
week. Well, my point is, to your point, there's certain players that thrive in a very simple system because they're just athletes and they're dumb. And then there's other guys that are much more schematic, where they're not quite the athlete, but because the scheme is so good and they're always in the right position, so smart, they can execute, right? So again,
like Hummer,
a millionth time, it all goes back to like, what's the scheme that's going to decide what players we want to keep and get rid of and pursue, et cetera.
That's Hummer Renfrow on the offensive side. Mm. You know, he's not the most athletic guy out there, but he runs, you know, a very specific type of routes with Derek Carr. He's got a very good rapport with Derek Carr, and Derek Carr knows how to get him the ball. So, the main thing that we have to focus on, what we're looking for, is we need to get better at the things that we were bad at. And it's like, the teams that are still alive in the playoffs do certain things well because that's what wins games, right? It's not just about scoring points. Like, they score more points. That's what we got. It's what they do, is how they score those points. Do they turn the ball over a lot? Do they create a lot of turnovers? Are they good in the red zone? Like, things like that, right? And these are things that we're not doing well this year, even though we did win 10 games. But moving forward, if you don't do those things well, and your scheme and your design and your personnel is set up that way, you could have uneven seasons where, okay, things just caught up to you this year, and maybe you win 7 games instead of winning 10, right? I think that we may be in for a bit of a change. And I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with having higher expectations of our team and our defense specifically.
So that's the question of the day. Which Raiders with expired contracts do we have to keep next season? Put it down in the comment section. We have the question pinned down there right for you. So that gets into the next thing. So again, we were talking coaching and scheme and how that matters. Well, we still only have an interim head coach. His name is Rich Spisaccia. And he spoke, according to Ian Rappaport, with Mark Davis today. He essentially did an interview.
Yeah, it's not just that they need to do interviews because of the Rooney Rule. The Raiders are going to do a real search. I mean, this is not going to be a situation like last time where the Las Vegas Raiders just kind of did some interviews that weren't exactly real and then hired John Gruden and then everybody celebrated. This is going to be a real search, and they've already put in some requests. Gerard Mayo, the Patriots de facto defensive coordinator, who's becoming a hotter candidate, I would say, as the days go by. He is expected to interview with the Las Vegas Raiders, but Bisaccia gets his shot today. He's going to meet with owner Mark Davis. Now, the two did meet weekly during the season, so it's not like it's totally out of the ordinary. And, you know, I had one coach tell me it seems more like an exit interview than a job interview. However, it is basically a job interview, and it is a chance for Bisaccia to state his case. From my read, from what I understand, it is unlikely that he stays on with the Raiders, but at least he's got a shot.
Unlikely that Rich Bisaccia stays with the Raiders. So this is not stays, but gets the head coaching job. So this is another weird one, right? Because he took over the team in very weird circumstances. We really don't know how Rich Bisaccia would handle a full season on a real team coming in as the head coach that didn't have more drama than Melrose Place, right?
That was such a good show.
Oh, it was so dirty, right? It was
such a good ass show.
It was like when Network.
Well, how old was I? Was I like still in high school? When did that come out? Like,
I think I was in middle school. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was in high school still then. Dude, that shit was fucking like legal porn. Like, I could watch this. Like, this on regular TV.
Like, back when, like, back in the day when someone would just show, like, a chick would show a little bit of leg and it was like the hottest thing ever. Like, now it's just like, I got this thing and I have all the porn in the world at my fingertips. I don't even watch a show like that. But back then, when you're starving,
the dark with like the beads of sweat on the cleavage and like the shining light on it glistening. Oh my God.
I was a big fan of the shadowy silhouette.
When they like
big, yeah.
The negligee.
Because then they can be completely naked and you know they're naked, but they can still get on TV because it's just the silhouette. Anyway.
Easy, JR.
Bisaccia, it's really hard to gauge exactly how he would do. But, I mean, in a business that's so results-oriented, that's so results-specific, is it unfair that he's not even – it sounds like he's not even getting really a fair shake to have the job as the head coach after he just captained – at worst, the second best season of the last 20 years. Should Mark Davis be taking him seriously as a head coach?
I think that the entire time he was coaching was his interview.
There's
things that Coach Bisaccia was. Or excuse me, that Mark Davis was looking for. And I think that
I thought for sure Mark you'd say Mayock, no. I thought for sure you'd say no. I'm surprised you're giving Bisaccia a shake here.
Well, yeah, I think that Mark Mayock just being so inept at his job that fucking Mark Davis didn't even want to fucking give him a fucking chance at all. Like, dude, you were. He was what I said he was. He was a fucking puppet. He came in to laugh at Gruden's jokes, and that was it. He was that guy.
I think he came in to be a scout. I think Gruden just wanted a scout.
A scout and just that's so.
Mark Davis, you do the work on the fourth rounders I don't want to do homework on, and I'll tell you who to pick in the first round or something like that.
Some to that effect. Yeah, so then if Mayock had shown more and he stuck around, I think Bisaccia would have had a hell of a lot higher shot to stick around. I think the fact that Mayock was gone and the way he was gone so quickly, like that was already decided. But like I said, it's like, why rock the boat during the season when you don't have to?
Yeah.
I think he may be leaving it up to the new GM to hire the coach or to kind of sign off on the coach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to be overly shocked because I feel like Mark Davis, I mean, he grew up around football. He's not dumb, right? He's not football dumb. Like his entire life has been football. His entire life has been the Raiders side out. He has views and knowledge that we don't. He's not dumb. But I think he's still kind of the like rich kid lazy where I think he wants to be involved in the process, but doesn't want to have to like make big decisions. He doesn't want to like make enemies. He wants to be the bearer of good news, you know? And so to be like, you know, actually a part of the hire, like a big chunk of the hiring process and the firing process and all those. And remember when Jack Del Rio had to announce his own firing? Like Mark Davis wouldn't even he made Del Rio do that. I think that's kind of partly a Mark Davis. So I'm not 100% sold that Mark Davis is going to have, you know, just hand the reins over to a GM, especially with a new coach. But I'm down to like think about it that way. But that also only kind of makes this Rich Bisaccia job interview that went down today on the 19th as we're recording this seem kind of, is it just a token move? Like, what is that job interview like? It's got to be, I hope it's at Hooters, just so it's very Mark Davis.
Applebee's, bro.
Applebee's. Maybe Outback gets a Bloomin' Onion. Talk about things over some margaritas.
I do like a good Bloomin' Onion. That's
so overrated. Just deep fried onion. Just deep fry anything else. Deep fry anything edible. That's supposed to be just eaten by itself. Why deep fry the onion?
I don't know, man. I like it.
The Bloomin' Onion is just proof you could deep fry. You could literally deep fry cat turd, and if you add some hot sauce to it and some ranch and deep fry it, then it's edible.
I don't know
that's
about
what the
that.
Bloomin' Onion proves.
But I will tell you this. My favorite thing that I've ever had deep fried that I've never seen again was a deep fried peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It was so good. Yes. Listen to this. Two pieces of white bread, like regular Wonder Bread, right? Regular bread.
Okay.
Peanut butter on both sides, jelly in the middle. They crimp it. They have a little crimper machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
They dip it in pancake batter.
Got him.
Deep fry it on the plate, powdered sugar, strawberry topping, whipped cream on top, diabetes special.
With a side of a defibrillator.
Yeah, with a side of diarrhea. Die of something. Diabetes.
I had deep fried Kool-Aid at the fair one time.
Yeah, it was like a slushy, right?
Not bad, right? And I got it just purely for the novelty and like the science of like, how do they deep fry a liquid? It's like, well, it's just like the powder, you know, it's like a goo. Uh-huh. And they, like you said, everything, you just batter it and deep fry it. You can literally put anything in there, right? You can put a car battery in there, fry it, deep fry it, and be like, all right, just chop it into sections and just eat around the outside. But it's like, what's Mark Davis doing here? Like, he knows Rich Bisaccia. He's been there for a while. The results are there, right? Like, if it's a results-oriented thing, it's like, Bisaccia doesn't have to, like, brag or, like, remind Mark of what he's accomplished.
Wait,
conversation.
Let's really break this down and look at it from a more, like, neutral position, okay?
What if they got haircuts together?
Ooh,
Bisaccia got the goatee trimmed, and Mark does the bowl cut.
You think they push the eyebrows up and trim them, get them nice and tight? So look, for as much as we want to talk about this team and how well they did, when Bisaccia took over, the team averaged 21.5 points a game, and they gave up 26.5 points a game. That's not good. Okay, they were very fortunate in a lot of respects to win the types of games that they won. They were like always down. Like, these are things you have to take a look at. They're winning games, but how are they winning these games? They're shootouts. They're back and forth things. They're not dominating these teams. They're not showing out there and showing they're the better team. They're just outgritting these teams. And you can be a guy that's out there. And like I said, like, there's something to be said for being the better team and being the favorite and going out there and showing that you're the favorite and putting it on a team, right? Like, we couldn't do that.
This is a whole new Soto. For as long as I knew this whole podcast, you've been like, results. That's all that matters. Wins and losses. You just got to win. And now you're like, well, they won, but they didn't win
good.
No.
What you're asking me is, what is Mark Davis asking him? I'm not saying I agree with it.
Okay.
I'm saying is, what is he asking him? And from this perspective, it's, I understand that you won, but let's take a look at these numbers. It's almost like the whole Kwiatkowski-Littleton conversation that we had. Okay, great. They look great, but then if you take the whole defenses that they had away from them, they're not all that good, right? So if you take away a lot of the things and you take a look at how the team performed after Bisaccia took over, they dropped in points per game scored, and they went higher in points per game allowed. And they were under 5. They scored 21.5 and they gave up 26.5. The penalties didn't get any better, right? They were still one of the highest penalized teams. If not for freaking the Dallas Cowboys just grabbing everybody, we would have probably been the highest penalized team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
The line seemed to get better, but then regressed mildly, you know, in the Bengals game. Like, it's not just When you look at this specific, in a bubble, in an actual season, it's all about winning games, right? When you project something moving forward, you have to look at different things and how you're winning. Because, like you said, things have a way of evening themselves out.
So ask that. So you be Mark Davis and I'll be Bisaccia. You ask that. You take that and ask me that question.
What do you mean?
You'll be Mark Davis, I'll be Rich Bisaccia.
Well, what question am I asking you? I said a lot of shit.
What you just said. Like, why can't we just blow teams out? Why are we just white knuckling this and win?
Yeah, so although we were winning a lot of these games, you know, we were very fortunate. Some of them were a lot of back and forth, and
you have some ranch on your lip. I mean, let me just get that.
If you're gonna be serious about this,
sorry. That's probably how it's going. Have you ever known me to be serious about anything?
That's true. How do you explain the success despite some of the peripheral numbers not really backing up a team being successful?
Well, sir, it's because we were less talented of a team. We were going against teams that were way better than us personnel wise, way better than us. Obviously, they've been together longer. Obviously, they had more continuity and they were just more talented. And yet we were still able to pull off those wins. And I like to, you know, not to toot my own horn, but beep, beep. I think my coaching was a big reason why we were able to beat teams that were way better than us talent wise. I mean, you just fired Mayock, your general manager, because he wasn't able to field quality players on that team. And I still was able to drive this team into the playoffs and win four games in a row to close out the regular season.
Okay. So I get that. And that's something that I'm going to keep into consideration, but now the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator stayed on. How do you account for our offense getting worse and our defense getting worse after you took over the team?
Do you want some more jalapeno poppers? You good? You want some more apps?
No, I'm just want some answers.
Okay. Want some answers? Okay. So there's a couple reasons. We lost our number one receiver, Henry Ruggs, as you know. We lost our best offensive player, maybe the best player on our team, Darren Waller, for five games, which you know. That was a big part of our decline for sure. But I will say this, despite what those numbers and what those nerds are telling you with their calculators, I did something this season that John Gruden was never able to do. And that was finish strong. So yeah, numbers regressed, right? Like the nerd stuff, like if you look at some stat sheets, they regressed. But the last three seasons, the Raiders have fallen apart in the second half of the season, losing records every single time. This season, four wins in a row to close out the regular season. So yeah, some of those numbers weren't good, but I got the only number that matters, and it's a letter. W. And these are all things that I think Mark knows. I know. That's exactly what it comes down to, right?
Yeah,
seriously.
Mark Davis? Mark Davis does not believe in Rich Bisaccia long term. That's the long and short of it. That's it. That's all we have to say about it. Now,
do we know that? Do we know that for sure?
Bro, he would have hired him already.
Well, they've got to go through the song and dance, Rooney Rule.
Not necessarily. No, he's already on the staff. Not necessarily.
To hire him? That's a good question.
He could have hired him. He could have hired him because he was already on the staff.
You can promote from within without having to interview a black coach?
Because they needed a coach. They needed a coach. They can't have no coach.
No. You're saying it like it's a logical thing. Do you know the rule for sure?
No, I know it is. Hang on, let me look. I'll keep talking. I'll find it.
Because that's what I'm wondering is, one, I think after what happened the last time Mark Davis hired John Gruden, he got all that shit for just like, this is the guy I want, so I'm going to get rid of Jack Del Rio.
The whole T. Martin fucking debacle.
Yeah, like, it's like, look, I got rid of Jack Del Rio. Del Rio. Literally the only coach up until Rich Bisaccia, Raiders head coach, that had a winning record since Flores. That's who Mark Davis got rid of because he just fell in love with John Gruden and wanted John Gruden. So I think he learned from his mistake last time and the backlash that he got last time. And so he's doing what he should do. Even if he has his guy, even if he thinks he's going to hire Rich Bisaccia, even if he's hell-bent on hiring Jim Harbaugh or whoever, fucking Mayo, whoever, right? Even if he's like dead set on it, I'm glad he's doing his due diligence. I'm glad he's still interviewing guys. I'm glad he's still looking, because so often he just falls in love with somebody and just swoons and then takes them. At least this time, it's like, all right, let me do these interviews. Let me do the process. Let me do this right this time. And I'm glad that Rich Bisaccia is part of that process, but I hope he is actually tangibly part of that process. I'm not saying he has to hire him, but I'm saying there's a lot of Rich Bisaccia made a very strong case this season to be an NFL head coach. And I think it should be taken seriously, not a token interview. It should be an interview taken seriously.
Let's see here.
I don't know what that rule is, right? Can you hire from within without Rooney ruling? And does that change if you're taking the interim tag off of a head coach? I wonder if they have is it one of those rules with 17 different lines of ruling?
Yeah, the only thing that I'm showing here is that you have to interview at least two minority candidates for a head coach and one minority candidate for coordinator.
Okay. So I think it's fair to say that the Rooney Rule applies. Like, he does have to interview.
Yeah.
Minorities. All right. Well, that's Rich Versace. We'll see how the interview went today. We'll see what comes out of it. Obviously, they're not going to talk about it. They're not going to leak anything, but we'll know when they make the announcement. But the big sexy pick, the one that everyone's been talking about, the one where all the noise is around, all the rumors, and all the betting sites are saying that this is the favorite to be the next head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, Jim Harbaugh, current coach of the Michigan Wolverines. I did a video yesterday on this. I'm very curious what you make of it all, Soto. Long and short of it, he's been rumored to be interested in it. The NFL is rumored to be interested in him. A lot of stories coming out all over the place. The big news here is before last season, nobody wanted Jim Harbaugh. Nobody wanted him. He went 2-4 in that COVID season with Michigan. Nobody wanted him. Nobody wanted him so bad, he took a $4 million pay cut to stay with the Wolverines. Who the hell takes a half salary pay cut in any job? Not even just like football coaches. Any job. Nobody takes pay cuts. You either get fired or you quit. Nobody takes pay cuts. No boss has the balls to go to their employee and say, hey, we're going to cut your pay in half and not expect them to just quit at that moment, right? So this was unprecedented, an unprecedented spit in the face of Harbaugh. That's how bad he was last season. And then this season rolls around. Michigan wins the Big Ten, goes to the college football playoff, and maybe most importantly, they beat Ohio State, whooped their ass. And now they're in a position to maybe start taking over the Big Ten, maybe. Like, it wasn't a fluky season, right? It wasn't just like they randomly went 12-2 and, you know, stumbled into a win over Ohio State. Like, they were pretty damn good this season. Well run. They got a lot of things going for them. So off the back of that, Harbaugh is all of a sudden the hot chick on the block again. So you said you're very, very confident that Jim Harbaugh is going to be the next coach of the Raiders. I'm very curious why.
It just seems like a Mark Davis pick.
It smells like it, doesn't it?
It smells like it. He's
been there before.
He's coached with the Raiders. It's a big name. It's a splash. And that's really it. You know, he's had some previous success,
which isn't a wrong answer, right? Looks and smells and tastes like a Mark Davis hire.
Yeah.
That's a valid point.
I'm seeing a lot of hate on here. Like, oh, he's coached this poorly in college, and he's this and this against top 10 teams, and he's this and this in bowl games, and he's 1-6 or whatever against Ohio State and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's in college. All right. In the pros, 3 out of 4 years in the NFC Championship game, and he went to the Super Bowl. That's pretty hefty.
Yeah.
So if we're picking him to, he took a San Diego program and turned them around. He took a 1-win Stanford team, and it took him a couple years. And it's not easy. He laid the foundation for David Shaw to come in and continue that program at Stanford.
Yeah.
He's a good coach, man. He's a good coach. Is he quirky? He fucking wears khakis and cleats. Yeah, he's quirky. But you know what? He gets the job done. When he's been in the pros and he's coached a pro team, the guy fucking got it done.
So this is what. So I'm not saying he is or isn't going to be the head coach, right? I'm just saying I think the noise and the rumor and the idea that he is going to be the next coach is based on jack shit. Not that he can't do it, right? Like, anybody could be head coach, right? Like, and again, I'm with you. Like, he looks, smells, and feels like a Mark Davis hire. But there's only been, until today, there's really only been one thing that's tied Jim Harbaugh to the Raiders. So Bruce Feldman, the article I'm looking at right now, he's a writer for The Athletic. 2.5 weeks ago, it was like the first week of January, he was the first one to write a story about, hey, Jim Harbaugh could be tied to the Raiders. And the entire thesis of that article, the entire basis of this whole Jim Harbaugh rumor mill was one anonymous source says that he's interested. That's it. That's the entire basis of the entire Jim Harbaugh to the Raiders thing. Not multiple sources that are named, not, you know, at least one guy who's going to say like, yeah, I know Jim really well and he's interested in it. Not Jim himself, not the Raiders. One anonymous source that Bruce Feldman found that said it until today when this other article came out. Mm-hmm. And now he says multiple sources inside Michigan football told The Athletic this week that they think if Harbaugh is offered the Raiders head coaching job, he'd take it. So now he's gone from one anonymous source to multiple anonymous sources. I mean, it's multiple. It could be two, it could be 10, it could be anything, right? Mm-hmm. So a couple things. I texted you the Athletic alerts that I got today. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Vic Tafer's article basically throwing a ton of cold water on Jim Harbaugh to the Raiders. And the other one being this Bruce Feldman one throwing a lot of hot water on Jim Harbaugh to the Raiders. Mm-hmm. So Bruce Feldman's fine writer, fine journalist. I'm not here to knock him, and that's not what I'm trying to do. But I am saying this. As some guy who's worked in media for almost 15 years, media members get their sources and get their stories and get their insight by doing favors for people. Hey, here's some info for you. You give me some info, right? Like, hey, you know, Jim Harbaugh, I just got word that, you know, I heard this story, you know, this rumor that this five-star recruit that was going to go to Alabama, you might be pulling out. Maybe you should give him a call. By the way, is it true you're going to go to the, you're thinking about going to the Raiders? And they do a little exchange like that. Sometimes it's as simple as Jim Harbaugh goes. So this is the other part. Jim Harbaugh is at a point to cash in this season. Mm-hmm. What he did with Michigan was amazing. And like you said, it wasn't a one season fluke. He had success in the NFL. He had success in other college plays. He has a long line of success. And now he's managed to do what everyone thought was the impossible. Send Michigan to the playoffs and beat Ohio State and win the Big Ten, right? Massive accomplishment. He did it after a pay cut. He is going to get his bag this season somewhere. And how do you get your bag? Leverage. You sit across the negotiation table with someone and say,
set that market up.
And you say, hey, if you don't want me, I got 10 other suitors for you, baby. Like, that's fine. You say no, I'll move on. Double that number or I'm going somewhere else. And what better leverage is there if you're a college football coach than saying I can go to the NFL? There's 8 head coaching jobs available in the NFL right now that would all pay me no less than 8, probably 10 or north million, probably more north of 10 million, right? You give me $11 million or I'm going to Las Vegas. I'm going to coach the Raiders.
And you probably read like Ric Flair. He'd be like, 8 million. I got a limousine outside a mile long with 8 women in there.
That's what Harbaugh's doing, right?
That's what he's doing.
And so Bruce Feldman, I'm not saying he did this on purpose or, you know, there's some, you know, seediness there, but Bruce Feldman, whether he meant to or not, did Jim Harbaugh a giant favor by letting everybody know that Harbaugh could go to the NFL. And so that's why when this whole conversation is based around that element, it's hard for me to take it super seriously. Again, could Harbaugh, like, this is a great time to move into the NFL, right? Normally when you take over an NFL team, it's because the coach is fired because the franchise sucks. The team sucks. The owner sucks. Everything's falling apart. This is a playoff team with a, you know, above average quarterback, and you're going to have a new GM that maybe you'll have some input on who that's going to be. You get to, you know, take over a team that's already winning, but you get to put your own imprint on it, right? Like, this is a great time to jump into the NFL if you're Jim Harbaugh, specifically the Raiders. So it makes sense. I just think, though, like I mentioned with Harbaugh and that D-line coach that went from Notre Dame to Michigan, I don't think he would have done that unless he knew Harbaugh's probably going to be there. And also Harbaugh, like, he donated $1 million of his own money, like all his incentives wins this season, back to the employees at the University of Michigan who didn't make a salary because of COVID. Like, this is a dude digging roots in Michigan. It just doesn't, you're right. He looks, smells, and tastes like a Mark Davis hire. This just feels more like a leverage move to me by Harbaugh to to get more money from Michigan. Now, if it backfires and Michigan gives him the double bird, then he goes to Las Vegas. But it just feels like he's going to stay at Michigan to me for all those reasons I mentioned.
Well, look at it from this perspective. If it's about getting the bag, it's about timing, right? Mm-hmm. This is his time to cash in on his previous success in the NFL. But also, if that doesn't work out, he can always go back to college and cash in on his previous success in college, because his last college success, his last college season was very successful, right? Mm-hmm. So he's in that situation now where he can cash in on his pro success, but also keep his college college prestige very high as a coach.
And it's also, it's no longer like NFL coaches don't make light years more money than college coaches anymore, right?
Hell
like
your, no.
your new USC coach, right?
Like got a grip and a couple of houses. Goddamn.
Like he's like, it was unheard of not that long ago to make for a college football coach to make $10 million.
Now it's happening.
Now that's like the bare minimum to get like a high end guy to get a Harbaugh.
And a lot of years too.
You know what I mean?
But what I'm saying is look, he knows he has that. He still has that there. Mm-hmm. He still has that. What I've heard a lot, and another one thing that I heard, I forgot who said, I should have sent it to you right away, but that a lot of these high profile coaches in college that have NFL experience are not digging this transfer portal, especially like a lot of the bigger programs. That's why you're seeing a lot of these smaller programs kind of getting a little bit better. Dude, look at freaking Deion at Jackson State. He got like the number one recruit in the entire country. It's this transfer portal, and like they're able to get money like from wherever now. They can get paid. They can make their own deals and get money. Mm-hmm. The dealership down the road can give them money to like sponsor them or whatever.
The strip club by the airport can just send hoochies to the frat house once a week.
Tampa University is going to be through the roof. Through the roof.
There's going to be some D3 school in Tampa that's going to be getting just 5-star recruits every position.
Guys will be walking around with Mons Venus t-shirts.
UNLV. UNLV is going to, what are they, Mountain West? They're going to win the Mountain West next season.
Everywhere. No, but that's what I'm saying is that there is reason to be a little bit more like, it's worse at college now than it is in the pro. At least in the pros, they're under contract. Mm-hmm. You may not get all the top stars that you want, but at least the ones you get are contracted.
At least you've got equity in them that they can't just walk away. You know,
no equity. It's like college football now is like college basketball. Like they could stay 1 or 2 years maybe, and then they're gone. They're like the one and dones, right? Yeah. The same thing here. It's college. Like, dude, you don't know how long you're going to have this kid.
This is the other downside of the Raiders, though. You got to play Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert for the next 10 years. And if the Broncos get their act together and get a decent quarterback, they're going to be a beast, too. Like, it's going to be rough competitively in the AFC West for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, man. There's competition everywhere. Or you can stay and play Ohio State. And you know those types of teams every single year too.
But I think that would make Harbaugh want to stay because of how they beat Ohio State and how they've got momentum. Like,
we got 1 out of 7 years. Like, come on, man.
But it's all looking forward.
That scares. I don't think that scares coaches, dude. Honestly,
how tough the AFC. I'm sure it's a factor. Not a factor you can't buy your way out of. But coaches want to succeed, and coaches know that if a college coach goes to the pros, right?
You're downplaying the egos of these coaches, dude. I don't think so.
You're downplaying how career driven these guys are. The career is, if I go to the NFL and I get blown out because I'm playing Herbert and Mahomes and I go, I know. 4-13 back to back seasons.
What do you guys think?
Between my leg. You tell me coaches don't think about that. Am I gonna succeed at this place or not?
I'm not saying that they don't. I'm thinking that you're hyping it up a lot more than it is.
I don't think so. I think coaches definitely think about that. Am I going to win here? Like, is this going to progress my career, or am I going to look like a fraud here and not make money?
Then Bisaccia wouldn't want to coach the Raiders.
Why would Bisaccia want
to coach the Raiders then?
Because he wasn't going to get a head coaching job ever for any other way. This was his chance, and it worked.
Why get a coaching job if you're going to get your freaking skull kicked in?
But they didn't. They went to the playoffs. Maybe he knew that. And again, it was a 3-2 team. It wasn't a team that was getting shit around. Anyway, that's something to think about with Jim Harbaugh. And you hear all these rumors that he's coming. A lot of other moving parts than just simply, you know, he kind of looks and smells like a Mark Davis pick, which he does. All right. The last one of the season. Little special effects. Good, the bad, and the ugly. Last one of the season. Playoff one. At least we're doing this for a playoff game. Down to the wire. Down to the final play. Raiders fall to the Bengals in the wild card round in the jungle. Raiders 19. Bengals 26. Most exciting game of wild card weekend. Wild card weekend sucked. It was all just blowouts, and Niners Cowboys was kind of good, but it was real ugly. But it was basically, yeah, four blowouts, two close games, and Raiders Bengals at least was fun.
That's fun for Raider fans. When me, you, and a couple of friends went to the Korean barbecue, four blowouts.
Yep.
All right, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll start with the good, like we always do. The good, Josh Jacobs, 13 carries for 86 yards, a 6.4 average. He also caught four passes of 44 yards, it's 11-yard average. So in total, he had 17 touches for 127 yards, 7.5-yard average. Excellent work, Josh Jacobs. Kudos to you. You're in the good.
You know what's most surprising? He had a 35-yard run.
35-yard fucking run.
You know, that's not him. He's not a breakaway running back.
It was cold as shit out there, too.
He's all right, you gave me two, I'm going to get five type of running back. He had a 35-yarder. That was his longest run of the season? I think it was. It was the longest run of the season for him.
Yeah.
Props.
Moving on, Denzel Perryman comes back from a lackluster game, from being hurt, but still playing through it. Led the team in tackles, 9 tackles, 8 solo. That's our hammer.
It's rare when Perryman isn't on this list. Really good. Like, it's a weird, weird game. He's either hurt or something weird happened.
Yeah. Divine Diablo and Nate Hobbs.
Rookies.
Each had 8 tackles, 3 solos, showing that the future is bright on the Raiders defense. It's going in the right direction. Speaking of young players in the Raiders defense, Max Crosby, 6 tackles, 3 solo, 1 sack, 2 tackles for loss, 2 quarterback hits. He was the highest rated defensive lineman in Super Wildcard Weekend.
Man, Mike Mayock, the GM, really did a great job. Mark Davis is sure going to give him a bonus for drafting those 3 guys. Oh, wait. Oops.
I mean, if he knows for a fact that, like, it was Gruden just making the picks. Again, it's like we talked about this when it came to Derek Carr in the red zone. It's like people who are like staunch Carr backers, like, they want to give Carr all the credit in between the 20s and then give Gruden all the blame in the red zone. It's like you got to spread it around evenly.
This is ironically like the season where Mayock gets fired. Like, this is going to go down as the best draft, even with Leatherwood. Let's say Leatherwood. I'm still not giving up on Leatherwood long term, even though he played terrible this season. Even if Leatherwood doesn't turn into be at least an average or better lineman, this is the best draft class the Raiders have had since like the Khalil Mack, Derek Carr, sure, Gabe Jackson season. Like, this was from 2 to like 7. Hit. One guy didn't really play. Hit. Like starters playing, like grading really well.
You know what really irks me though is like people are looking back at Miller in his rookie season when he had like that one really, really bad game when he gave up like 5 sacks. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that was one really bad game. That's like Leatherwood almost every single week.
He never gave up that many sacks in a single week, but I'm not trying to defend Leatherwood.
As many hits.
But he was bad.
All right, keep moving on. It is a different subject. Carlson, perfect again. 4-for-4 field goals, 1-for-1 extra point.
Money.
The guy's a stud.
Money.
He got the bag, and he deserves it. Moving on to the bad, just overall sloppy play. Mm-hmm. Carr had 2 turnovers. Hunter Renfrow muffed another punt. He was able to recover it, but he muffed another punt. Barber stepping out on that kickoff at the 2-yard line. Like, come on, man. You can't make these fucking mistakes.
Is that the dumbest play of the season?
It's one of them.
As far as just, like, there's been more disastrous plays, right? Like we saw the Cardinal.
Willie Snead smacking that ball in the air, the end zone, to get it intercepted in overtime. That was pretty fucking dumb, dude.
But at least that one, he's like playing the ball in a bat. You know what I mean? Like, at least like I can understand like 13% of what he did was correct. Peyton Barber just like, hey, this ball's literally going to go one of two places, out of bounds or in the end zone. Both of them are fantastic. Awesome. Instead, you make an effort. You get out of position. He wasn't running up to the ball as the guy who's returning it. He was running backwards to chase a ball that he's not supposed to be chasing. The return man's behind you. He's supposed to get that ball. You run up to it at the 2-yard line and step out of bounds? Like, there's like 19 brain farts in there.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, that might be the biggest dumb play of the season. Any player, any team, all season long. There wasn't one smart thing about it.
Yeah,
it wasn't like a good idea that went bad. It wasn't like a good idea with bad execution or a bad idea with good execution. It was stupid in like 17 different ways. God damn it, Barber. We were hyping him up this season a little bit too.
Yeah.
Spitting our faces.
Also, our interior offensive line penalties killed a lot of drives. Leatherwood, James, and Simpson were all guilty of it. They just didn't play well.
We had three holding penalties on one drive. And I think we still got a field goal out of it. We still somehow got a field goal out of three holding penalties on one drive. Brutal. Absolutely brutal.
And that takes us to the ugly, the phantom whistle. On a third down play, third and long, actually, Joe Burrow's flushed out to his right, running by in time, out of bounds, getting to the end line, and flings the ball across his body. As the ball's in the air, we hear a referee whistle.
Everyone stops.
And the ball is caught for a touchdown.
And the refs conveniently say, oh, no, nothing to see here. We're fine.
Oh, that's good. They said, oh, that's good.
Everything's good. Is there any team that has more multiple notorious shafts by the refs in the playoffs? They're literally doing a 30 for 30 on the Tuck rule. That's coming out in like a couple weeks.
Dude, the Tuck rule, the immaculate reception, the fucking, what was the fucking index card bullshit?
Yep.
The fucking that shit.
And now this one. And now this
Come
one.
On,
like,
man.
People like try to undercut that. Well, they would have lost. No, dude, that was the difference in 4 points. Like, instead of a touchdown, they kick a field goal. And then when we're on that final drive, we kick a field goal instead of trying, like, desperately needing to get a touchdown. All we need is a field goal. And we go into overtime where we're 4-0. Were we kicking everybody's ass in overtime? Like, that was a game altered. Just because it wasn't in the last play of like the fourth quarter doesn't make it not a game altering penalty. It was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
It needs a name.
The phantom whistle.
Yeah. I like the bungle in the jungle.
No, they already have that.
They do?
Yeah. They've called them the bungles for so many years.
Did you see the Photoshop of someone photoshopped the referee? Instead of his white stripes, they were orange.
Orange and black,
like the Bengals.
Bitches. All right, well, that's the good, the bad, the ugly, folks.
Last one of the season.
It's gonna be a long time before we hear that again.
Yeah, we're gonna put that away and save it for September. All right, ready to do some what up winbacks?
Let's do it.
VL8962.
Definitely not a bot.
I'm still defending Leatherwood. Raise his hand emoji. He's a rookie in a tumultuous year. Trashing on rookies is so ignorant to me. Scheme, coaching, and development matters. You would think Raider Nation would learn their lesson with Colton Miller.
I just talked about it. All right. It can be said and it can be defended.
Mm-hmm.
That Alex Leatherwood is the worst offensive lineman in the NFL.
No, he's not the worst offensive lineman on the team. Brendan Parker is.
Hang on. He has the most pre-snap penalties in the NFL. He has the most penalties on offensive linemen. The most penalties overall in the NFL. He has the highest pressure allowed rate that didn't get much better moving in from tackle to guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he has one of the lowest win rates, or he, I think he was, what was his score PFF? And I'm not saying that that's the end-all, be-all, but yeah, that's just another thing to tab on. He's like in the low 30s or high 20s. It's just not good. And the thing is, I understand what you're saying, but there's nothing to defend here. You can't defend Leatherwood. You can saying that he's a rookie and he's young and he can develop, that's not a defense. That's not a defense for his play this year. You know, I think he's mincing his words a little bit. I think he could still be hopeful for Leatherwood, but saying that he's a young and rookie is not a defense. His play was horrid.
It's yeah. The thing with me is I'm way more like, I'm less about attaching like blame and grade and more about like functionally, what do we do? Because it's the thing with Leatherwood, like he's not going anywhere. First round draft pick. He's going to play again next season, be part of the Raiders next season. All we can hope for is that he can improve. All we can hope for is Tom Cable, the offensive coordinator, even better.
If he can be like a Robert Gallery light, I'll be good with that. Because he was drafted top back. He was like a
first
round five pick.
Was he top
like
five?
He was drafted pretty high.
He was so big. He had that Gaston hair.
But he had the little arms. He couldn't play tackle. He moved into guard, and he was a fucking killer at guard. Mm-hmm. If he can play a killer guard, if he can be a serviceable guard, clean up the penalties. And the problem that I have here is this. We see Nick Saban with the nice hair and fucking little Southern accent and talking and this and that. That guy cusses more than anyone I've ever seen. And he talks about other people cussing. Oh, yeah, Dabo can cuss all the time and all this shit. He's hard on his players. You remember when he was coaching the Dolphins and he was cussing out players in the Dolphins and kicking them out, making them cry and shit.
He's not as nice as he looks in the Affleck commercial. That's
no,
sure.
Definitely not with Dion. Must be the money. But he's tough. He coaches his players tough. And for you to come from that environment to come to the NFL and be this poor in penalties, that's just, you're just, I don't know what's going on in your head, man. I don't know if that's going to be fixable to a degree where you can have some sort of confidence in him for an entire season.
Ron White said it best. Can't fix stupid. Cisco E. See if the next GM and coach decide to keep Carr or flip him for as many picks as they can get. They can sign Mariota to be the new starter who will be cheaper than Carr and who is more mobile. Harbaugh would add a few better O-linemen, get the running game, passing games coordinator, and he can bring in his guy Fangio as DC. A lot to unpack there, but Mariota is not going to be the starter for the Las Vegas Raiders. I would be shocked if they kept him.
Probably
just because
not,
he's like when you grade like how good a quarterback is, he grades as a good backup quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. He's like a, you know, top 10 backup quarterback on just being purely good. But like we mentioned, he's so injury prone, you can't count on him. And his style of play is opposite of what we do in Las Vegas. It's opposite of Derek Carr. So you have to, so he may not be available. Wait.
Opposite of what we have done. We don't know who the coordinator is going to be. We don't know who the coach is going to be.
He can't throw the ball. Like he's just not an accurate passer.
I mean, he's not Cam Newton.
Cam Newton's at least Cam Newton's like big and can run the ball without like
Cam Newton cannot throw the ball.
Can't throw the ball. Neither can Mariota. But Mariota can't stay healthy as a running quarterback. So it's like
neither can Cam.
What can you do? Right? At least Cam's built like a linebacker. Mariota's built like me. So it's like what? Like he can't be a starter. And he's not a doesn't check any of the boxes for a backup. So Mariota
gone. I don't think so. You know, it's so open right now, right? Almost as open as RJ's butthole. It's so open.
Nothing's that open.
That's true. It's so open. Like we have no
leaning
clue.
To the side. I have to lean on a butt cheek to
if the air blows,
so it doesn't just eat the chair.
just swallows the chair. So look, we just don't have any idea. And the thing is we can't really shit on anything that happens. Because we don't know what if a new coach comes in, Mr. Coach X comes in and says, you know what? I don't think Carr is my guy long term. We only have him for one more year.
Or GM. Yeah.
Or the GM, same thing. Like yep, same thing. They discuss and they say, you know what? he had probably one of his best statistical years, yardage wise, win wise. But we think a lot of things factored into that. A lot of things are showing that things are going to regress to the mean in next year and the following years because of, you know, you're upside down, you know, 5 points since Bisaccia took over and points given up as opposed to points scored and all these last second wins and stuff like that, right? That's something that's not sustainable over a long period of time. Okay, understand that. Let's just say that's what they say. And they say, now is the perfect time to deal Derek Carr because A, he came off as one of his best years ever, right? B, he's hot because the team was hot. They went to the playoffs. They're still in the news. He's one of the guys that's seen as a playoff guy, okay? Three, he's under contract for another year, and it's a good contract, all right? So they have, the new team has time to sign him, okay? And we can get stuff back for him. This is the time to get something back for him and build moving forward the way I want to build. All you have to do, if you're a coach, a GM, whatever, is you got to sell one person on this, and that's Mark Davis. If you sell Mark Davis on your plan, that's going to happen. And it's not so far-fetched either. It's I would say it's pretty half, it's pretty 50-50 right now what's going to happen, because we have no idea who the coach is going to be, no idea who the GM is going to be, and until we know any of that, we have no idea what's going to happen with this roster at all. There's a couple people that are safe here and there. Like, well, I don't think Waller's going anywhere. I don't think Colt Miller's going anywhere. I don't think Crosby's going anywhere. You know, any of the rookies. But, you know, Carr, Jacobs, those are names that could be, you know, sent packing. You don't know.
If I'm the thing is, though, if I'm a brand new GM or coach and I get rid of a franchise quarterback coming off of a season where he's threw for more yards than any other Raiders quarterback, you got to have another quarterback ready. And if you go into nothing mode,
you don't necessarily have to, man. Not the yeah, thing is,
or you're no, starting you off, don't. You're no, starting you off in don't, a deep
RJ.
Hole.
RJ, you're thinking like a fan. You're not.
No, I'm thinking like you're thinking like a fan. No, get rid of him.
No, I'm not. RJ, a plan. RJ, stop. This is the Las Vegas Raiders, not the Las Vegas Derek Carrs. This is sometimes you have to take a step back to move forward. Sometimes you have to take a step back and work on a foundation to build a bigger structure. If I'm not saying yes or no, if they're not sold that Derek Carr is the guy to take them to where they want to go, the time is now.
The time is now. But I also don't think they're going to do it without a really good backup setup. I don't think a new guy's going to come in and risk his new job by not having a quarterback. We'll see. And it all depends on who's coming in. And it also depends on how deep that contract is, right? Like Gruden had no problem torpedoing the entire roster because he had 10 years to get there, right? He had more job security than anybody in the NFL. So he's like, I don't care. Like, I'll get rid of Khalil Mack. I'll get rid of Amari Cooper. I'll do whatever I want because I have job security. The contract also, I think, is going to be a big dependent on that. Last one, Leonard L. The autumn wind is a beer fart. Not really a question there. I just love the idea, especially if it's us, especially if we're the windbags. This sounds like maybe like an insult from like a Chiefs or Broncos fan, but I'm kind of digging it. Autumn wind is a beer fart. Beer farts start blowing into opposing stadiums.
The autumn wind is a beer fart.
Not a bad way to go. A little silent but deadly in the elevator. You hit all the buttons.
It happens.
And then jump out. It's a move I've pulled before. All right, that's it for us.
Wait, we all?
Again, first show of the offseason. It's all offseason stuff. And boy, is this offseason is interesting.
Is this technically season 3 of the Windbags?
It's the second offseason. But if you count the offseason as part of the upcoming season, then it's season 3. Season 3 of the Windbags.
Like the first season was like the end of last year.
Yep. So that's one season.
And that was that like our pilot episode and like another episode, right?
And then see, like, you know, they do like a pilot season, it's only like 4 episodes. And then if they see if they keep it, it's like, all right, YouTube hasn't kicked us off yet. So now we're gonna do a full full second season. Now we're on starting the full third season. A little cliffhanger to end season 2, building the season 3, maybe add some new characters. a ratings friendly wedding or something, got a baby, you know, start killing off some key characters that no one go Game of Thrones on some bitches, you know, start swinging some axes.
You know what the thing is, man? I'm telling
we'll
you,
show, we'll show the dragons a lot faster than Game of Thrones. I promise.
Yeah, for sure. We were thinking that this off season might not, like, it's like, oh man, it's going to be so hard to create content for the off season because, like, look at all that happened in the season. What, how can you top that? I'm like, dude, there's like so much that's uncertain right now with this team. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I mean, if it's a new, I mean, it's going to be a new GM. That's a story that's not going to be old for months.
Did you say
like
nude?
A good chance of,
did you say new GM or nude GM?
A little from column A, a little from column B. A
little dip, a little there, a little dap there.
I mean, if there's going to be one franchise that'll hire the first female GM, it's going to be the Raiders, right? They're the first female team president. Maybe that's how she gets the job.
You remember that show Reno 911?
Oh, I still watch it. It's on HBO Max.
You remember Nick Swartz's character, right? Beauty, right?
What was his name?
I forgot his name. It was so good, though.
But he always tied his shirt like this.
Yeah, with his roller skating.
He's on roller skates, skating around.
So they were arresting him for lewd behavior. He's like, are you saying lube? Lube behavior? So good. That's like a guilty pleasure show. Like,
oh, it's awesome. Well, it's the best. Like, you're not gonna pay attention in the TV and you're doing shit. You just want something playing in the background,
like one liners and little things.
And just because, yeah, cause it's all just like, God, it's all just like multiple 2 minute segments so that kind of live by themselves. It's great. All right, we'll see you next time. But until then,
knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really, truly appreciate it. Make sure you give us a follow on YouTube, all of our social media handles, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those good things. Let's stay in touch in between shows, shall we? Until next time, later.